Welcome to Holistic Health Made Simple. Are you tired of chasing fad diets and endless workouts? Frustrated and confused by the conflicting advice on health and weight loss? Well, you're not alone. I'm Jolene, a nutritional therapy practitioner, and I'm here to guide you on a different path through holistic wellness. Together, we'll blend ancestral wisdom with scientific principles, making health and weight loss a reality. Say goodbye to yo-yo dieting and hello to simple, individualized steps that will help you reach your goals. Let's explore the power of healing your gut, optimizing your metabolism, and embracing whole foods. Ready to make that personalized wellness a reality? Let's get started on your journey to real health.
Hello, hello, everybody. I am very fortunate to have Helen here today, who is a Hashimoto's and thyroid specialist, and she is going to dig deep a little bit for us on living with Hashimoto's, the gut health component, and what we all need to do. Helen, thank you so much for joining me. And why don't you elaborate a little bit on your specialty and how you got into this?
Okay, yeah. So, well, thanks for having me. I originally got into what I'm doing now as a nutritional therapist because of my own health. I have Hashimoto's, I have hypothyroidism, plus several other autoimmune conditions, and my health completely tanked. And I was severely ill for several years, struggled to function on a daily basis. And a friend kindly brought me some nutritional therapy sessions as a birthday gift for my 40th. And it started to turn things around. And that's when I started to think there's obviously more to the kind of nutrition side. And that's when I decided to study myself. I managed to turn my own health around. And that's now what I do, helping other women do the same.
Oh, that is awesome. And just to clarify that we are both nutritional therapists, but slightly different. So yeah. But the premise of therapy is digging that little bit deeper when it comes to nutrition. And that's what we have in common is we dig that little deeper. So how did you start digging to figure out how to feel better? Like, because I know when you go to the doctor, you have this, they throw a pill at you and they say, oh, well, you just got to live with the symptoms, or they throw other pills at you for the symptoms. Yeah. But you never really feel better.
Exactly. And that's exactly how I felt. I was on medication. I would say it kept me alive, but it really didn't give me any quality of life. And that's what I wanted. I am a trained biomedical scientist, which is what I did initially. And so I'm always very curious of kind of what's behind things and like digging further into research. And I never really wanted to accept that I was just going to have to put up with the pain that I lived with, the fatigue, the brain fog, among the other symptoms that I had. They were probably my worst. But I just wouldn't accept that I was going to have to put up with this. So I just started reading and researching initially. So I'd buy books on Hashimoto's and thyroid conditions. I started reading research papers. Once I worked with a nutritional therapist myself and we switched to an anti-inflammatory diet, I saw a lot of the symptoms that I'd had for quite a long time. The insomnia was probably the first thing that went. Within 3 weeks, my insomnia that I'd had for over 20 years had gone completely. That was the quickest thing. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it made a huge difference, not only to my sleep, but my energy. To my mood, my gut symptoms that I'd had for years and years, I'd been diagnosed with celiac disease, so they cleared up really, really quickly within a couple of months, and that's really what spurred me on to kind of dig further, is seeing those improvements from those few sessions that I had with a nutritional therapist myself.
Yeah, it's amazing when you start making the basic changes how much better you feel. But I've got a question. I'm going to back it up a little bit. Before you were officially diagnosed, did you know something was wrong? Did it take a while to get to the diet? I mean, because they do test thyroid, but they don't really get you, like they don't put all the parts together for you. So like sometimes we see things or we feel things, we just feel off, we gain weight, or we're sluggish, tired, whatever it is. And they don't put the two and two together for a while till lab work. Basically, doctors don't put it together till lab work. Basically, you know.
Exactly. The symptoms don't really come into it until the lab shows that there's an issue, usually. Mm-hmm. I was struggling for quite a long time before I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed with celiac disease first, and that I would say that took 6 years for them to diagnose that. And all the time, obviously, I was struggling with my weight being up and down, with bloating, cramping, severe reactions to food and not knowing what it was. I tried eliminating things myself and just really couldn't get to grips with it. I was also tested for my thyroid at the same time as I was diagnosed with a celiac disease, and my TSH was abnormal. I was retested a few months later and it was fine. So nothing else was done. They didn't test my antibodies, which they should have done, and I would have known at that point that I had Hashimoto's. It's very common with celiac disease, that for the two of them to go together, so they really should have tested it, but they didn't. And I wasn't tested again for another 8 years, and in time I was just going backwards and forwards to the doctors with more and more complaints, feeling worse and worse and worse. And it was actually, I was working in America and a friend suspected I might have Lyme disease, and I went for testing for Lyme disease, and they tested my thyroid panel in America, and they were like, you have a thyroid condition.
Wow.
And obviously when I got home, I had further testing, and they basically revealed that I got Hashimoto's.
Wow. Yeah, no, Lyme also goes very underdiagnosed as well. So sometimes the out of the box thinkers go, maybe you should get tested for it just in case.
Yeah.
But it's funny because we know now, I mean, we know in our world, I'm not sure how far the medical community is, but celiac tends to go hand in hand. Celiac, lactose intolerance, and thyroid all seem to go really hand in hand. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever dug deep to see which comes first, but I have a feeling they're all interconnected because it all starts down in the gut and what affects what when. You know, I'm not saying that if you have celiac, you're going to have thyroid problems, but if you're not getting better, that's another place to start exploring. Like, I always like to give my listeners places, like, dig a little deeper, try to explore. Don't take, oh, well, that's it, and you just have to live with it as an answer, because we're often just brushed under the rug. Like, okay, well, that's beyond my scope. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And even if you are tested for celiac disease and aren't positive, I think my blood tests for it, it took until the third attempt for them to get a positive result. Because there is quite a high rate of false negatives. So just because you've had negative results doesn't mean you don't have it. And also, even if you don't have celiac disease, there is a higher incidence of non-celiac gluten sensitivity with those with Hashimoto's and hyperthyroidism. So that the gluten tends to drive that autoimmune response.
And we're noticing when I speak with people, and I don't know if you've noticed this since you've traveled all over, that wheat in America and wheat in Europe or certain European countries affect us differently for some reason. And I don't know, you know, there's a lot of theories on that. We don't have to go into that, but they're saying that because the wheat's you know, it's different here. It's grown differently.
Yeah.
It's the seed is developed in a way so it's hardier to last through our weather to grow as much as we grow.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll just leave that part at that. We'll leave that part at
that. Yeah, that's a whole.
They can go into Paris, like where you are, and have bread without, if they're just sensitive, without any problem. But when they're here, there's like, it's absolutely off the table.
Yeah, I've heard of people having issues with the bread in the US and not here. So definitely is a difference somewhere along the line.
So how exactly you got diagnosed, you started working with a nutritional therapist. What made you keep going? What sparked your interest in saying, now I want to help others? Because that's basically, you went from I'm not well to now I want to help everybody. I mean, and that's very common. It's very common. We all want to help, and it's something that we're knowledgeable. And because you come from a background, a science background, it makes a lot more sense because you can look at all the studies, you can look at all the holistic remedies and kind of pick them apart and put the two best practices together.
Yeah, definitely. I started the nutritional therapy in probably 2016, and I saw a lot of improvement, but it wasn't anywhere near back to normal. My nutritional therapist retired, and I stayed as I was for a while. I tried different medications. I switched to a T4, T3 medication. I introduced LDN, which again, both of those helped, but didn't get me back where I wanted. In 2019, I September, I started studying nutrition. And it was just nutrition and health coaching at that point. So it was an introductory kind of level. It wasn't a nutritional therapy. By January 2020, so in the space of 3 or 4 months, the changes that I'd made from what I'd learned, I started to feel normal again. I started to feel like I could do things. So I wasn't just kind of managing my symptoms. I was actually getting on with life again. And that's when I decided that I was going to do the extra nutritional therapy. So it was 3 additional years, more for my benefit at that point. But I did start practicing the nutrition health coaching. So I thought, well, you know, if I can get this far, then why not help others? I couldn't find the help when I was looking for it. There just didn't seem to be that help available. And there is some authors and people working on it in the US, but I couldn't find that in Europe. Mm-hmm. So I basically decided, well, I'll do the nutritional health coaching. I'll practice doing that whilst I'm doing the nutritional therapy studying. And it just progressed basically. From getting back to full health, I was like, well, if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's not difficult once you know what to look for and what changes to make. Mm-hmm. It's just like a big jigsaw puzzle with each person of kind of which bits kind of are missing for that person. I absolutely love what I've done. I'm so glad that I changed that career path and have decided to kind of do this. I feel like I'm now doing what I should have been doing.
Oh, that's awesome. I love hearing that, because I think the puzzle pieces is what keeps me intrigued all the time, is like, it's a giant puzzle. Let's figure it out. Because everybody wants to go. I mean, I'm in my 50s. So, you know, we grew up with, you do this diet or you do this diet, or, and it's always the same diet per person. And it doesn't really ever get any, it might get someone 10% better, if that. You know, it's always looked as a weight loss, but they start feeling better. Yeah, you're always going to start feeling better. You're switching to foods that are nourishing you, but nothing gets you past that 10% unless you start digging into foods, because healthy foods, probably certain healthy foods affected you the same way as junk food. I mean,
oh, for sure. Yeah.
When our body's not working, like, so how do you, like, where do you go from there? Like, let's get a little bit into the gut component from there, because that's always where the healthy food versus junk food takes me, is it tends to be in the gut and how that affects it. But each person's still individual.
Yeah. Everybody is so different. There is kind of obviously a core of the things that I tend to do with all my clients, but everybody needs kind of that like individual, like magnifying glass on what's going on. The gut side of things, it plays a huge, huge role in what's going on with the thyroid, but also the immune system and that autoimmunity as well. So I do tend to focus a lot on that. I particularly, when I changed my diet, I removed the foods that were an issue. And this is tends to be what happens. People start removing the foods and then they have to remove more and more and more, because their gut's still reacting. They've not addressed that gut healing. And I did exactly the same. I removed the foods and I felt much better, but I didn't feel 100%. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I realized that I needed to put back in what I was missing, but I also needed to do the gut healing. There's a lot of damage that goes on with the autoimmune process, with the inflammation in the gut and kind of that dysbiosis when it starts to occur, that imbalance of your bacteria. It causes a huge amount of damage. And especially for me with the celiac disease, that again, on top of it, causes further damage. And I never addressed that. I never looked at what my gut needed in order to repair. And that was certainly certain foods that I was missing that I needed. Things like the omega-3s, which are anti-inflammatory, things that are rich in things like vitamin A that help heal your gut wall, the zinc that's needed for that stomach acid production, making sure I was getting those nutrients, but also looking at, on the lifestyle side of it, managing my stress, because stress can have a huge impact on the digestive tract, and not a lot of people are aware of that. And I was, again, one of those people.
Not a lot of people even aware they're stressed.
Exactly, that low-grade chronic stress that on-the-go feeling that we have all the time, where our life never stops, we never sit down, never sit still, that's stress for our system. And people don't realise that they are stressed, like you say, because they don't class it as stress.
You said something I want to circle back to. I know there's going to be a little bit of lag, everybody, so just bear with us. circle back to, we talk a lot about gut health and removing things for gut health. And it's very common right now for people to feel awesome when they have gut issues on something like an AIP or even a carnivore diet. And they figure, well, I'm better. But what the key part that you said that most people miss is that there's work to be done to heal the gut lining, because we're meant to be omnivorous, basically. Yeah. Some form of omnivorous. Each person is going to be slightly different, but we remove it so we feel better. The symptoms are gone. And when we eat it, we don't.
Yeah.
But like you said, there's that repair that is the step that's often skipped. So what do you take your clients through that, or do only when they need it, or just do you always do a touch of the repair aspect of it?
I look at it as a broad spectrum. So I look at what needs removing, what we need to re-inoculate when it comes to that gut bacteria, what we need to repair. So what foods can help repair the gut lining, but also supplementation if needed. And if things aren't progressing as I would expect, then testing to dig deeper to find out exactly what imbalances are going on and kind of what markers are showing up as being problematic, so that we can target those areas, again, with diet, lifestyle, but also supplements.
Okay. Okay. That it's just, I don't think we talk about the repair part enough. It's always take a probiotic. And I'm big on fermented foods, but sometimes when your gut's damaged, you can't even handle that. It's more than just throwing things. It's repairing that lining and the holes in those lining. That's the key.
Yeah.
Because when you start removing things, it doesn't start going through the barriers. That's great, but they're still there. The holes are still there. I mean, or they're healing, but they're going to take years upon years to do. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. And you want to accelerate that process so that you're not, because obviously once I'd done the change the diet, and I did go to the AIP initially, and I got stuck in that elimination phase because my nutritional therapist retired and I was left doing it on my own. And that is not designed to be left in that phase. The whole AIP is for you to basically remove what's problematic, do the work on healing, and then reintroduce the foods that you need. We're designed to have the widest variety of food we can, so we can get all the nutrients that our body needs in order to function. If we're stuck on that restrictive diet, it's just harder and harder to get all the nutrients at the levels that we need them. And yes, you're going to feel better than you did, but you're not going to feel 100% until you've done that healing.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of symptoms, you had thyroid issues, but what kind of gut symptoms do you see? Because I think we get so used to being a little bloated.
Yeah.
Being a little gassy, a little burpy, or a little indigestion after a big meal. We just think that's normal because there's all commercials bombarding us with little pills or tablets to take. We don't realize that you should be able to eat a meal or most of your meals, if not all of them, and just move on with your day.
Yeah, exactly. When I was studying, one of my tutors had said to me, you shouldn't be able to feel that digestive process. You shouldn't be able to hear it, smell it, or feel it. You should be eating your food and it does its job and you should not notice it whatsoever. So you shouldn't be getting the constipation or the diarrhea. You shouldn't be getting the bloating, the cramping, the gas, the heartburn, the reflux, again, all of which are quite common. Low stomach acid is really common with hyperthyroidism. So that can cause a lot of inflammation further down the tract. And that, again, can create a lot of imbalance in the bacteria, a lot of that gas. But it's not normal. We shouldn't be experiencing that. And I think that's a big part of when I work with clients, of educating them on what is normal and what isn't normal. What kind of, yes, you become used to it and maybe it's normal for you right now, but it shouldn't be normal.
You said it right now. What's normal for you isn't normal. Just because you feel like it's normal is not it's common for you, but it's not normal.
Yeah, exactly.
And getting that switch. So I've got, when you get something like Hashimoto's, like hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's, they kind of go hand in hand. A lot of thyroid issues. Is there any way to fully reverse it? Or you'll always, once it hits the Hashimoto stage, you're pretty much always going to be on some sort of medication? That's a question. That was not.
But for a lot of people, the Hashimoto's comes first, the autoimmune side of things. The hyperthyroidism is a result of the Hashimoto's. So the attack on the thyroid from the immune system is what causes the hyperthyroidism. And for most cases of hyperthyroidism, Hashimoto's is the cause of it. So by the time you've got to the kind of the thyroid markers being out of range on your tests, you've probably had that inflammation and that autoimmune attack going on for quite a while. If you can catch it in the early stages before it disrupts the thyroid hormone production, before it turns into like overt hyperthyroidism, you may be able to avoid medication if you make the changes that you need to make in order to get it, that autoimmune side of things, under control. Some people, even if they've gone into the hyperthyroidism and required medication, if they make the changes and they haven't had too much damage to the thyroid done, they again can manage to reduce or come off the medication. Obviously, that's something they need to do with their doctor. Obviously, because it took quite a long time for them to pick up on my side of things, of what was going on. So I would probably say it'd been going on for probably about 10 years by the time I was diagnosed. That damage, I think, was already done. So coming off of medication for me has not been an option. But I now have what I didn't have before on just the medication. I have the quality of life as well as the kind of, obviously, the preservation of life. I have the quality that goes with it.
That's the key, too, is the quality. What would you say to somebody who has minor gut issues but really no diagnosis everywhere? Would you warn them, like, you're going down a path that you're going to end up with something down the road? Because I think too often we just feel off or this, but we're not officially on the other side. Like I've myself have been on the edge of many autoimmune, like, oh, you probably have rheumatoid arthritis. You're too young for the medication. Deal with the pain pills. I didn't think, deal with the pain pills. I mean, this was, because I'm older, this was in my 20s, and the medicine they had back then, they didn't want to put someone unless they were severely affected in their 20s, because it was so damaging, the medicine. What would you suggest? Because somehow I managed to skate just on the edge of everything.
I would say if you are having symptoms, if it's gut symptoms or whatever other symptoms, your body is trying to send you a message that things aren't right, that something is not in balance, that there's inflammation going on. Whatever is going on internally, those symptoms are a signal that things aren't functioning as they should be. So definitely pay attention to it. I certainly didn't. My lifestyle prior to diagnosis, prior to becoming really ill with it, I never stopped. My life was very stressful. I kind of went from work to kind of working out to socializing, going out. It was just constant. It never stopped. And that's another thing as well, taking that time for yourself, even just doing that small thing of just slowing down a little bit and taking some time where you don't do a great deal and you just relax. That can make a big difference to those symptoms you're experiencing and stop that progression just by giving your body that chance to recuperate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you just said something that triggered, is that you were a long time before you were diagnosed, but you worked hard at your job, you were very stressed out, you worked out, you went out.
Yeah.
We've all been there, we've all done that. And a lot of us growing up in the 70s and the 80s, we were taught life a little differently. Yeah. We were taught to just go, 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 it's no big deal. Go rest with, what the saying back in the 90s was, like, you can rest when you're dead. And I think a lot of us took that literally. Yeah. Yeah. So what kind of suggestions would you give to someone who's lived that crazy life and is maybe now starting to slow down, but realize that the damage is there? Like, what advice would you give them to start doing something? Like, where would you start them, some simple ways to get them started, or what to look at to, like, kind of get an idea of where to start?
I would say probably before even diet. I mean, diet's really important, but I would look at stress management. It's something that I overlooked a huge part, but even something as simple as 10 minutes of meditation a day, getting out in nature, kind of even spending time socializing with your friends where it's not drinking and partying, where it's like rejuvenating rather than like depleting. that social aspect is really mm-hmm. important. So isolation, it can be damaging to your immune regulation. So just starting to introduce some of those practices where you do something for yourself that you enjoy, that's going to help you relax. And it's just going to turn that stress response off. That stress response creates a huge amount of inflammation when it's on all the time. And it's supposed to be adaptive. It's supposed to be turned on and turned off when it's needed. And just by teaching it to turn itself off can have a huge impact on how you feel and how you can then deal with everything else that life throws at you.
Okay. I like that because I think that's the biggest, I think for those of us who have lived that life, that's the hardest thing. And a lot of us got even more stressed out in a time where we were, you know, the pandemic hit and everybody came down, but they didn't really. They got even more stressed out. I don't know what they did, but they got more stressed out about everything. Yeah. And taking that time for you and family. And I mean, a lot of us have really realized how important relationships is, not in the party atmosphere. I have settled down quite a bit in the past 10 years, but it's always that go, 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 go. Yeah. And we need to take a step back.
Yeah, definitely.
So what are some of the symptoms? If wait a minute, no, what kind of testing do you determine or do you start with to figure out what's going on with the gut? What specific tests? Because there's so many. And if someone, you know, isn't coming to one of us and they're going out and I'm just going to put a caveat in America, some of these tests, your doctor's not going to run. You're going to have to find a functional nutritionist, a functional medical practitioner, someone. And depending in what state, you might have to go out of state to find someone who's legally allowed to run some of these tests. But what kind of tests do you start with?
So with clients, I'll start with the dietary changes first and kind of introducing a little bit of stress reduction kind of management techniques. And then when I see the client at the follow-up session, if none of those symptoms of their gut issues have shifted, then I will start looking at testing. I don't tend to go to testing straight away because I find not everybody needs it. Just making those changes is enough for most people, probably about 80% of my clients. Just making those changes is enough to kind of get back on top of things. But if that doesn't shift, if they're still persistent or you've got certain stubborn symptoms that just won't go, then I'll look at testing. And I would look at things like the breath testing for SIBO. That is very common, again, with hypothyroidism. Looking at that would be a test. Some of your doctors may be able to order that, but not all. It may be a case of doing it through an online private lab. You can also ask your doctor to test you for H. pylori. Again, that is something that has increased incidence with those with hypothyroidism and can impact your gut health further down the tract. But one of the biggest ones that I really like to do if things aren't resolving is basically a comprehensive stool analysis test. And it goes through various different markers. It'll look at inflammatory markers, immune markers. It will look at kind of your bacterial balance, maybe if there's yeasts involved that are overgrowing. It can look at parasites if you include that in it. So if parasites have managed to take a hold, what your short chain fatty acids are doing. And these, again, they help with repairing those cells in your gut wall. So they can, and they also help regulate your immune system and also help with thyroid function regulation as well. So that can be a really, really good one to get a client to order. It can be quite expensive. It's usually 300 to 400 euros here. And so it is quite an investment, which is why I don't do it initially unless it's needed. But it can give you a lot of information, and then you can target where you make those changes, what dietary changes you make, which supplements you add at which times in order to improve what's going on in the gut. So yeah, it is very, very beneficial. That one you will not get through your doctor. That would have to be an online. Yeah, it would have to be an online private laboratory, and quite a lot of them will only allow you to order it through a practitioner such as myself or yourself, a nutritional therapist.
The key to that one is finding someone who actually knows what they're doing when they're looking at the results.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Because we all have parasites in us, just not, hopefully not in an abundance. There's always going to be a little, there's going to be trace things that if someone doesn't know what they're looking at, they can go towards dealing with things that are normally there. With the gut, like I've said before, there's a balance. Sometimes you need a little bit of the things that we technically say are bad. Yeah. Because they balance out to make sure something good doesn't go overboard.
Yeah, exactly. You need the balance of both. It can't, you don't want the good stuff to overgrow. It can be just as damaging if that happens as if the bad stuff does. You want it to kind of keep each other in check. And the problem comes when that doesn't happen, when one side gets the upper hand and it allows other things to take hold, like the parasites that, like you say, normally for most people, if they weren't compromised with their health already, probably would not be an issue they'd deal with. Their immune system would kind of basically process it and get rid of what needed and kind of balance what isn't. But for those of us who are compromised, if your gut health isn't balanced, it can be very difficult to deal with.
Exactly. And I'm just going to point out that in the States now, they are doing a stool test when we get to a certain age versus a colonoscopy. That's not what we're talking about. They're only looking at very specific things to see if you need that colonoscopy. That's not what they're not looking at the rest. I mean, they may come up with H. pylori, but that's about it. Or they might come up with one or two like strong things, but that they're not really looking at anything. They're looking because they're trying to prevent an abundance of colonoscopies because they are so invasive, which I think is a positive at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely. I had the kind of stool test through the doctor, and I've had it privately, and it doesn't measure anywhere near the same depth of kind of markers that the private test does.
No, not at all. And I mean, it's interesting that you're starting to see it now, and I think that it gets confusing. And I want to reiterate that we are not giving you medical advice, but even when we look at a stool test, we are still not giving medical advice. We are helping you with your nutrition, and it gives us the keys. There are tests that give us the keys to help gear what you need nutritionally that medical professions don't run.
And
that's the biggest. I don't think I've ever gone into depth about that. We don't diagnose. Like if we see something, at least me personally here, if I see something that needs a diagnosis, I'm going to send you to your doctor.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm like, there's something really off here. You need to go talk to your doctor.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes people think that we go and there's that line and we're always over the line. It's like, oh no. We are not. There's some that might be. I can't speak for everyone, but I can tell by talking to you that like we're sticking on this line of nutrition. We're getting the tests we need to be able to skew your diet to make you feel optimum.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like you. I will switch food. I always start with food because testing is expensive. And an elimination diet's an elimination diet. Half the time I can figure out what foods you're sensitive to just by that. And you need to eliminate it anyways to heal. So
yeah.
Why spend the $300 to $400 on testing when we can just do the same diet we need to do anyways? Because the testing is just going to confirm it.
Exactly. So yeah, it's not necessary for everybody. And like you say, if any red flags do crop up that are indicating there may be further issues, then yeah, definitely refer to kind of specialists, to doctors, whoever needs to be. Basically put in touch with at that point to make sure. I think nutritional therapy is not a replacement for medical treatment. It's supposed to be a support, basically. The medical system cannot recover your health completely. It's not designed to do that. It's designed to kind of treat the illness that you have with the medication. Even a lot of doctors will admit that they don't get the training on the nutrition. They can't help you with that side. Their job is for you to go in, them to kind of look at your symptoms, them to run tests, to give you a diagnosis and give you the correct medication. That's kind of where their extent goes to. They don't have the time to spend 40 minutes, an hour chatting with you about your diet and what else you need to make. I know the World Health Organization at the moment are really, really keen for the medical system and things like nutritional therapy to be more integrated. so that surgeries and kind of hospitals have the access to that they can refer their clients to. Okay, we've done our part, now go see the nutritional therapist, now go kind of see, same as you would with a physiotherapist or anything like that. It's just another therapy to kind of support you as a whole.
Exactly. I know out here there's a lot of discussion about registered dietitians versus a nutritional therapy, because we work very differently unless that dietitian decided to go back to school and learn a little bit more. A registered dietitian gives you the basics.
Yeah, when it comes to
nutrition. There's nothing wrong with them. They're taught a very specific thing. They are not taught to support disease. They're taught to teach you how to eat a balanced diet.
Yeah, I mean, here we have, with the dietitians and nutritional therapists here, as a nutritional therapy, you have much more in-depth knowledge of nutrition. But as a dietitian, they tend to work within the framework of the medical system. And they're looking at your diet in relation to a particular disease. So they'll be saying, obviously, for heart disease, don't eat this, don't eat that. Kind of. They're not looking at rebalancing. They're just looking at removing the things that are going to be an issue with that particular disease. They're also studying kind of things like tube feeding, which obviously is a nutritional therapist. We don't do that. So it is very different kind of aspects of what we do. And again, they can both complement each other. You can work with a dietitian for your particular illness and a nutritional therapist to recover kind of that quality of life that you're looking for.
Absolutely. It's just, I sometimes like to point out the differences, because there is a difference, and it's not that one's good and one's bad. They're different. They do different things.
Yes.
And from, if you like a more natural approach, you want to work with both a dietitian and a nutritional therapist, because we're going to help you with your actual food. We're going to help you change and modify stress. You know, the whole body.
Yeah.
You've got to get that whole parasympathetic mode. Like, you know, there's dietitians that I've talked to and I'm like, you need to reduce your stress, because they don't even get that. They're all about the food. We're like, our whole body's one. And I think everything's coming around though. Slowly.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's going in the right direction. It's definitely, there's more availability of help out there for people if they're wanting to look at like the nutrition side of things, the lifestyle side of things. I find that extremely limiting when I was looking. I couldn't find what I was looking for, but I see it more now that there is more and more people studying to do. And a lot of them have been in the same situation with their health and have done the exactly same thing. They've decided, well, kind of to get out there and change their career and provide that help.
Absolutely. And I think when you link arms with somebody who's gone through what you've gone through, but also went back to learn learn about it, but get more educated that it's not one way to do it for each person.
Exactly.
You know, you get probably, you know, tons of Hashimoto's or thyroid people, but each one needs a little bit different protocol. And protocol for me isn't just medicine, it's food. It's like a different diet. I don't mean to lose weight, but like a different way of eating, different types of food to support what's going on in your body, because we all grew up differently, so we all ate differently, which all caused different issues in our gut.
Yeah.
You got to remember that what we're dealing with now in our 40s and 50s and 60s pretty much is the effect of what we did when we were a child, when we were 10, 20, 30.
Yeah, it accumulates. Until
you start it, it's everything you've done behind you. So some of us had a lot of years to fix, and some had less, which is good. The quicker we can get you down in the younger age, the better.
Yeah, definitely. But I do see now as well with diagnoses of like things like Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism, it's becoming younger and younger all the time. When I was diagnosed, I was told, well, we didn't check your thyroid because at your age, we didn't think it'd be a problem. And I was like, well, that's great, thanks. I see now on some of the support groups, in my own support group, women joining and saying, I'm on here because my daughter's been diagnosed and she's 12. So it is happening much earlier because of how we live our lives. And I think that on-the-go lifestyle that we kind of inherit from our parents and from what we see around us. Also, obviously, genetics plays a part, but also kind of families tend to eat in patterns as well. Like, you know, it gets passed down. And if there's an issue, then it's just starting earlier and earlier. The inflammatory foods, the processed foods, there's so much more of that available. So it's much harder to know what a healthy diet is, I think.
Do you think as time progressed, like think back when you were a child to what children eat today? I mean, I don't have children, so it's hard, but there's more foods in packets. And we've, because of the stressful, rushed life, they're eating, like we had junk food. I'm not going to say that there wasn't junk food when I was younger. It was, but it wasn't a meal all the time. Like,
no.
Mom still had to cook dinner. We still had to get dinner somehow. Like, it didn't really come out of a package.
Yeah, there wasn't so much of it around. And I also think now it's very difficult for a family to have one person stay at home and have the time to cook. Most families mm-hmm. now, both people have to work, whether that's the mother or the father, they both have to work to kind of make ends meet now. I think when I was growing up, that really wasn't the case. My mum didn't work until I got a little bit older. And now it's common for kids to kind of, their parents are both working from them being tiny, because needs must, you've got to pay the bills, you've got to put the food on the table.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't always have the time to kind of cook a meal from scratch or feel like you've got the energy or inspiration to do it. And yeah, you can quickly fall into those habits of just grabbing what's quick and easy, what's already made, and you can just heat up.
Exactly. I mean, one of the biggest tips I get is, or give is, I get it, you're working hard. I mean, I used to work 80 hours a week. I was just like everybody is taking a couple hours, like thinking it through when you go to the grocery store, a couple hours, making sure you have meat cooked, like your protein cooked for the week, packaged out. If you're not good about refrigerator, put a little in the freezer, whatever you need to do, and then just add your vegetable. Like, that's the biggest tip I can give people for a meal at home is, or when you do have the time to cook a meal, double it, freeze it in single servings, make your own frozen food.
Exactly.
I know it takes some time, but you got to prioritize one or the other, especially when you have, it's either you or a family member that's not well, you've got to make these changes.
Yeah. And I find
what
as well,
what kind of changes do you suggest? Go ahead.
I definitely recommend batch cooking to my clients. And I will often get a bit of pushback on that of like, well, when am I going to get the time to do that? And the crazy thing is it ends up actually saving you time, because you're fueling your body with what it needs to function properly. You function much better and you end up spending less time doing the tasks that you normally do because you can function better. So you actually end up freeing more time up is what I find with clients, that they actually find they've got more time by doing the batch cooking and eating proper meals because they feel good and they can actually function at a better level.
Absolutely. I mean, I've also done some of the math on it, and it actually will save you money in the long run, because if you're not buying a pre-made meal, which isn't necessarily cheaper than you making it yourself, but for some it can be. I haven't hit every store. But you go to a drive-through or you go to a takeout, and I'm sorry, I can make hamburgers at home cheaper than that $20 bag for a family of four.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's more than $20 now. It's been a long time since I've been through a drive-through.
Yeah, exactly. It adds up. It costs you more than you think. And I think it's not always the cost that is the reason you're doing it. It's that time saving. You shattered and you just don't feel like... And I can understand that. I certainly had that before I changed my diet. When I first worked with a nutritional therapist, and she said to me about kind of, I mean, my diet was fairly good, to be fair. I was already celiac, so there was no gluten. I didn't eat a lot of processed packaged food. It was home cooked. My husband's a chef. So I was quite lucky on that side of things. But the energy, I just did not have the energy to get up and cook. And there were times when my husband was out and I was quite ill. And it was a toss-up between get off the couch and make food and expend that energy doing that, or stay on the sofa and not eat, because I just didn't feel like I could do it. So I do understand that energy side of things where you're just absolutely wiped out. But just putting that little bit of effort in when you can, when you do have those days that you can't function and you can't do when you're first in those first stages of recovery, you've already got the food in your fridge or your freezer that you've done. So you can just get it out and reheat it.
Yeah. So I'm big on freezer food. I think some people don't like it. I don't know. But so when I make a meal, I will always freeze it. And I always take it in small, individual. I don't care that there's two of us in the house or four people in the house. Because if you have four servings and all four of you want it, then you pull out four. But if it's only you, that way you're not pulling out. Oh, you're like, oh, I'm not going to pull it out because it's for the whole family. That's why purposely tell everybody, make it in single servings. It's going to make your life a lot easier. Yes, it's a lot more containers, but they also, the small containers stack much better in the freezer.
Yeah, exactly.
So what other tips would you like to leave us with or thought processes on if you're struggling, and especially if you're struggling like you were and maybe you're still going doctor to doctor?
Okay, so if you're in that stage where you're struggling, the first thing I would say is make sure you actually get in the right tests through your doctor. Quite often they will just test your TSH. And this is a stimulating hormone for your thyroid. It triggers your thyroid to make the thyroid hormone that can be used. It doesn't mean that your thyroid is actually doing what that stimulating hormone is telling it to do. So that can be in range and your actually thyroid hormones can be out of range. So make sure you're getting your TSH, your free T4, your free T3. If you've got hyperthyroidism, make sure you've been tested for Hashimoto's, because a lot of doctors won't test for that. And as we talked about, there's so much you can do with diet and lifestyle to improve that Hashimoto side of things, and you won't be given medication for that side of things. The medication you'll receive is only for the hyperthyroidism. So you want to be making those diet and lifestyle changes to get the autoimmune attack under control. So you need to know that's what's going on. I mean, for most people it is, but it, you need to know, and you can monitor how active that attack is by the numbers of those antibodies. I have a free testing guide if anybody doesn't know what tests they need. I have an essential thyroid testing checklist. It tells you what you need, why you need them, and kind of what optimal is versus normal. So there's a big difference. So yeah, if anybody wants a copy of that, they're welcome.
Awesome. And I'm definitely linking all of your information in the show notes so that it would be easy to find all of that. So before we wrap it up, tell everyone where they can actually find you, but I will be linking it so you guys will have easy buttons.
Okay, you can find me on my website, which is helenmalibern.com. You can also find me on Instagram, and again, that's Helen Malibern. I have a Facebook group which is full of kind of my tips and advice. I quite often run through challenges or masterclasses in there to help with recovery. And that is Hashimoto's Nutrition and Health. You can also find me on LinkedIn, and that is Hashimoto's Recovery Specialist, I believe. But yeah, that's kind of the place you can find me. You can drop me an email again through my website if you prefer. But yeah.
Awesome. Helen, thank you so much for taking the time and finding a time that worked for both of us with our time difference. I really appreciate you spending this time with me this morning or this afternoon. And thank you so much for showing up and sharing everything, because it was a lot of great information. I've learned a lot today, and I hope everybody else has as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Helen, and I hope you did as well. She has graciously given me links to a free masterclass, as well as her free 5-day challenge that starts April 22nd, 2024. So if you're listening to this within the first few days of publication, run on over down to the show notes, grab that link and sign up. You will learn all about controlling your blood sugar, gut health, and everything else between these two free resources that she generously gave to us. On that note, friends, I will see you next time. Bye. Thanks for listening in today. I hope you've got some nuggets to take away on your health journey. Remember, this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. No medical advice is being given. By listening to this podcast, you agree to the full disclaimer, which is linked in the show notes. You can stay connected to me by joining the newsletter at holistichealthmadesimple.com, where I share additional tips and tricks weekly. Once again, thank you for being a part of my community, and until next time, have a blessed day.